morning, everyone. As I watched the conclusion of that, I guess it was a four-hour meeting, originally scheduled to be one. Four-hour meeting between executives of BP, a multinational corporation based in London, and the U.S. president. And I was reminded that, in some sense, America was formed as a battle between corporations controlled by kings around the world and little colonial governments attempting to compete and confront and the Constitution.
And not get taken advantage of.
Exactly. And size mattered back then.
Absolutely.
And formed the basis of a lot of the corporate law, which was the basis for the U.S. Constitution back in 1787. But times have certainly changed. And to discuss the question of where corporate power versus national power stands in the 21st century, particularly in light of what's going on between BP and the White House, we've got Richard Grossman, who's a former co-director of the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy, and co-author of Taking Care of Business, Citizenship, and the Charter of Incorporation. He joins us from New York. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And David S. Reynolds, who we just spoke with, the distinguished professor of American Literature and American Studies at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, who just told that great story about how Andrew Jackson killed the Bank of the United States. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
All right. Richard, first of all, we think of corporations as kind of running the show in the American economy these days, with the government kind of in the background refereeing. But that wasn't the case in American history originally, was it?
Well, it wasn't the hope and the intention of many people who were active politically and organizing in the beginning of the 19th century. But I'm afraid that by the end of the 1800s, by the beginning of the 20th century, we pretty much had a corporate system dominated by a corporate set of people, a corporate class of people who had effectively wrapped their institution in the Constitution of the United States. And I think, you know, to look at what's going on today, we really can't understand it unless we explore the history that brought us to this place that really has disempowered fundamentally our municipal governments and our state governments with regard to the corporation, and allowed the federal government to preempt the field. But the federal government has basically given in. It's become a part of the corporate system over the last 100 years, so that it has basically enabled the corporate directors to do what they want to do. At this point, there is not much tradition or power left for the federal government to do anything within the confines of the law that the corporations have helped to develop through the courts and the legislature over the last 100 years.
And indeed, Richard Grossman, the meeting yesterday at the White House, there was no binding qualities to that meeting. They agreed, and as we spoke about it last hour, it was mostly the result of public relations issues. There was no sort of statutory basis for that meeting. David S. Reynolds, what changed in America that made it more, or made it much easier for corporations to function, as Richard Grossman is saying? Originally, states used to charter corporations. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that's right. And then what happened is in the 19th century, you did have a series of Supreme Court rulings and legislation that allowed for the rise of corporations. And then the Civil War happens, and after the Civil War, you really get the rise of big business, which becomes entwined in government. And so certainly by the end of the 19th century, the corporations are there, and it's become more and more so that way. I think there's a countervailing force, though, in American history that maybe we can talk about.
All right, sure. What's the countervailing force?
Well, that is, you know, there is this deep well. You know, no one believed in law and the establishment more than Abraham Lincoln. Nobody. He was a lawyer, a politician to the very core. And yet, he said, greater than any statute, any law, any government is public opinion in America. And Lincoln himself tapped into public opinion. He took a very unpopular stance. Abolitionism in the North was extremely unpopular at the time. He used language and rhetoric to tap in and to change people's opinion and to take a moral stance against what was then the institution, which was the institution of slavery.
And it was in moral terms. We shouldn't forget that it's also a confrontation of the entire mercantile economic class in the South, which used slavery to support its entire industry,
right? Yeah. I mean, big business back then was slavery, basically. And, you know, he stood up against that the way Andrew Jackson stood up against the bank. But what it does take is someone who's very firm in his moral vision and who really wants to do this. It can be done. But there are, and then there are the so-called smaller people outside of government, the Rosa Parks, the Martin Luther King. These are the real movers and shakers that are outside of the corporations, outside of the government. But it's what they stand for, or even Lincoln within the presidency. It's Lincoln at Gettysburg.
Okay, but what we're really left with now, Richard Grossman, is where we are right now. We have corporations that are larger and in some cases more powerful than some governments around the world.
Than most states and most governments, that's right.
Exactly. So toppling a corporation, some of these corporations are too big to fail.
You know, we have a disaster in the Gulf. But what's been going on, I'm almost 70 years old. For the last 40 years, I've been working with people across the country that have been resisting all kinds of corporate and government assaults, labor assaults, toxic chemical assaults, mining, logging, you know, one thing after another. In every case, what happens is they run into the law of the land, because the corporations have been writing the law for over 100 years. So what these corporations are doing, not just running the economy, they're also running the political system. You know, think back to the Citizens United case just a few months ago, where the Supreme Court affirmed again that corporations are wrapped in the First Amendment, are wrapped in the Constitution. So the law in there has been enabling the corporations. If this government, if the president really wants to take on the corporate power, what has to happen is to undo, really, the history of the last 150 years.
Which would take constitutional amendments.
No, which will take a mass movement of people if he wants to have the support that the professor is talking about. But in fact, the federal government was totally complicit in busting and destroying the populist movement at the end of the 19th century that was out to prevent the coming of a corporate state. We have a corporate state now. We have a corporate system just like we had a slave system. Right. And there are no options. There's no remedy by playing around the edges, as far as I'm concerned. It has to be confronted totally, and it's not the president can't do it without the support of the people.
Well, I wonder,
but the people have been crushed time they try to attempt this kind of thing.
Well, I wonder if the Citizens United case was on the president's mind in that meeting with BP yesterday. Richard Grossman, former co-director of the Program on Corporations, Law and Democracy, author of Taking Care of Business, Citizenship, and the Charter of Incorporation, and David S. Reynolds, Distinguished Professor of American Literature and American Studies at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. His latest book, The Waking Giant, all about the Jacksonian era. Professor Reynolds and Professor Grossman, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.